And our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which is available at Amazon. He also wrote, back in 1988, The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline. His website is jamesperloff.com. Let me share just a quick statement from Mark in Florida. He said, on July 20th, 2011, the remains of Rudolf Hess were exhumed, cremated, and strewn at sea, along with his wife and parents. His gravesite, which became a shrine for peace, is forever gone. His gravestone, which bore the epitaph, I dared, was destroyed. So, this is what it has come down to. The warmongers, realizing that Hess is the poster boy for peace, have made a concerted effort to make him disappear. Being done on July 20th is on purpose and meant to send a clear message. On July 20th, 1944, an attempt was made to assassinate Hitler at Wolf's Lair Field Headquarters. Okay.
What a spot-on comment. What a spot-on insight.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one way you really close something out by burning someone to a crisp, right?
Yes.
Just to continue what we were saying, the British were asked, how come Hess has to stay here at $100 million a year? How come we can't just let him go?
Sure.
And the British said, it's not us. It's those mean Russians. You know, they've got a grudge against Hess over Operation Barbarossa. They won't let him go. But then what happens? 1985, Gorbachev comes to power. And Gorbachev was asked at a press conference, what about Rudolf Hess? And Gorbachev said, we've got nothing against the man. He can go home. Now the British no longer have an excuse. Uh-huh. And as you probably know, he told his nurse, I'll never get out of here alive. The British will kill me. But right before his scheduled release in 1987, there was a news flash around the world. Rudolf Hess hangs himself at Spandau Prison. Now, he's been in prison for 46 years. He's going to be released to his loving family. And now he just suddenly decides to hang himself. Now, let's talk about why this was not possible. It was not possible because Hess had suffered a stroke. He couldn't even tie his own shoelaces, let alone hang himself. So it was absurd, and his family insisted that an independent autopsy be done that confirmed he'd been strangled. And I want to quote an affidavit from Han Hain, who was an attorney with the South African National Intelligence Service. It's a sworn affidavit on information received from an agent of the Mossad. Okay, and here's what he says in the affidavit, which I'm condensing. Quote, Reich Minister Rudolf Hess was murdered at the instigation of the British Home Office. The murder was committed by two members of the British SAS, that's Special Air Service. The murder of Rudolf Hess had become necessary because the government of the USSR intended to release the prisoner. During the afternoon walk of the prisoner in the prison grounds, the two men lay in wait for the prisoner in the summer house located in the prison grounds and throttled him with a 1.5-meter-long cable. Then a suicide through, quote-unquote, hanging was feigned, unquote, Han Hain, sworn affidavit. And that's been confirmed, by the way, by some people in the British government. And you'll find that in the book Double Standards, co-written by a number of British historians on the Hess case. So the point being that even 40 years after the war was over, the Zionists and the banksters could not let it be known to the British public that this war could have been ended. That was what they feared, that Hess would reveal that the war. According to British historian Peter Padfield, the late Peter Padfield, Hess had a handwritten note from Hitler offering to completely end the war, leave Britain completely alone, and relinquish France. So they just wanted to take care of business with Russia. That was it. They had no intention of fight. So that concludes our when talking about, did Germany want to conquer the world? And we've been moving backwards from Russia. Now we've done France and England. And what I'd like to do next, and more briefly, is to address what started it all, which was the recovery of the territories lost under the Versailles Treaty. You know, we're talking about Rhineland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Poland, right? Now, a point that people need to know is that Woodrow Wilson had assured the Germans there would be no annexations of territory, no punitive damages. What a laugh. I mean, they had to inflate the currency like a zillion times to pay off even the pensions of Allied soldiers when the war was over. And Wilson also said self-determination would be respected. But you know what happened? They carved up the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Russian Empire, the Ottoman Empire, and Germany was decimated. And the Rhineland was occupied by French troops. So when they they moved back to the Rhineland. They were just taking back their own territory. It had always belonged to Germany. And by the way, you know, if the Israelis, the Zionists, say they have the right to return to Israel after 2,000 years, I think the Germans probably had that same right after 20.
Sure, you know, absolutely.
Okay, how about Austria? Okay, again, it's a matter of self-determination. Now, a plebiscite was taken in Austria in 1921, which is before the quote-unquote Nazi Party. As you know, the word Nazi did not even exist in Germany. It was a Western invention. But in 1921, 98% of all Austrians voted they wanted to form a union with Germany, and the Allies disallowed it. Now, why did Austria want this union with Germany? Because the at Versailles, Austria lost its – it was part of the originally part of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, right? But it lost Hungary, so it lost its agriculture. It lost Bohemia, so it lost its industry. And it was now a mountain – surrounded by mountains, Austria. It used to have a seaports on the Adriatic Sea. So they were totally cut off. They wanted to join Germany's prosperity and also to join in the fight against communism. And by the way, they've been part of Germany for 9.5 centuries. So I just got to throw this in. You know the movie The Sound of Music?
Yes. What a piece of propaganda that – oh, my gosh.
No, the music is great. I mean,
it's wonderful.
The music was – I don't know any musical that had that many good songs in it. But the real reason for that movie was the subplot – about Germany and how they were encroaching on Austria, which was the exact opposite. The Austrians wanted that union. They were not trying. They were not, you know, except for 2% did not who were against it. Okay, then we come to the Sudetenland, which and then Czechoslovakia. The Sudetenland had always been part of Germany. They simply took it back, and the people of Sudetenland rejoiced. And by the way, the Poles and the Slovaks and the Hungarians all did the same thing. Czechoslovakia was an artificially created nation, and all the countries took back their land, not just Germany, you know. Now, after that, when the war broke out with Poland, it was said that Hitler had broken his promise, that there'd be no further demands, right? And I got to quote Commander William Guy Carr, and he was a commander in the British Navy and later in Canadian intelligence. Here's what he writes in his great book, Pawns in the Game. Quote, was it a broken promise? The public was made to believe, and at that time I was made to believe, that Hitler's word couldn't be trusted. The public was told that after his putsch into Sudetenland, that Hitler had said he intended to make no further demands. It was made to appear by the press that the German note to Poland was another demand, and therefore a broken promise. History proves it was no such thing. What Hitler said was that he would make no further demands after he'd rectified the injustices inflicted upon the German people by the Versailles Treaty. That's a horse of a very different color. It's a typical example of how a half-truth is far more dangerous than a lie. Hitler's promise was qualified. He promised no further demands after the problems involving Sudetenland, the Polish quarter, and Danzig had been solved. The German grievances were real and justified, unquote, Commander William Guy Carr.
Right. And they were. They were just taking back land that was taken away from them deliberately to provoke future problems that was taken away from them with the Versailles Treaty.
Right. And in the case of Poland, as you know, of course, Poland was given a strip of land that cut Germany in half.
Right.
And, you know, supposing after World War One, the Germans had won it and they took a strip of land that cut off Wales from England. Now, how long would the British put up with that? Come on.
Exactly.
So the Germans were negotiating with Poland for this, and they promised to they said they will compensate you for the return of this land. But the Poland stopped negotiating, and you touched on this already, because they were given assurances by the British, the French, and the American ambassador, William C. Bullitt, we'll back you to the hilt on this. Don't give in an inch to the Germans. And that's why the Poles stopped negotiating with Germany. And, of course, with the massacres and other things that, and those military sorties you mentioned that eventually led to the war between Germany and Poland. But exactly as you said, they were no pipsqueaks. I mean, the Poles had their military was 700,000 strong. They had almost 1,000 aircraft. They had tanks. They were no pushovers. And actually, this is a little bit ironic and in retrospect. One of their generals boasted that if war broke out with Germany, they would march straight to Berlin. And, of course, you know, the exact opposite. But the Germans had not been tested since the First World War, and the Poles thought they were going to be pushovers, which they were not. And, of course, the Poles soon found out that Britain and France couldn't help them out. For Britain to help the Poles, they'd have to invade Germany and go through Germany, and France would have to go through the Siegfried Line, and they weren't about to do that. So the Poles were left holding the bag, and the war was started.
Exactly. they were just used as pawns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was terrible. It's terrible what happened to that country. And, I mean, the whole thing, the whole war, everything was, people were lied to. And as you say, look what happened to Poland afterwards, you know?
Yeah, they lost their sovereignty anyway, and nobody in the West cared one bit. It's one of those things, if you just think about it logically, you can see that the pretext for the war made no sense. So we were talking about the evidence that Japan and Germany did not conquer the world, and we've now completed that. And that brings us up to the Holocaust. Now, I just want to mention at the outset that I'm half Jewish myself. I'm not considered a Jew by Talmudic Jews because it's my father that was Jewish. My mother was she was of Dutch and French ancestry. Her name was Relier. But I didn't even know my father was Jewish until I was in my 20s, believe it or not. He just kept it secret. He didn't go to synagogue. He was not in any way identifying with Jews or Talmudism or anything like that. His biggest concern in life was whether or not the Red Sox won the pennant, and he never mentioned Israel once to my recollection. So I am half Jewish ethnically, but and I don't have any sort of cultural upbringing in that area. I was actually raised in an agnostic home. We had no religion at all. I am now a Christian. Okay. So let's talk a little about the Holocaust. And I'm just going to raise a few points, and I'll throw them back to you each time. The first thing I want to note about the Holocaust is that it's the only event, and this is, again, where critical thinking comes into play, that enjoys legal protection. And as you know, there's a lady named Ursula Haverback, who's 87 years old in Germany.
Bless her heart.
She's going to prison for simply saying that Auschwitz was not a death camp, it was a work camp. Now, she's going to prison under the anti-Holocaust denial laws of the European Union. Now, here's the thing, critical thinkers. You know, you can challenge any other event. Like, for example, Deanna, if I told you, you know, I think that the Battle of Gettysburg was won by the Confederates, you might think I was crazy, but you wouldn't say I should go to prison because I disagreed with it, you know. Or now some people might say, well, that's different because it wasn't a genocide. Well, what about the other genocides? What about Pol Pot's genocide in Cambodia, or the Cultural Revolution in the Mao Zedong, or the Armenian genocide, or the Ukrainian genocide, the Holodomor? Now, you can deny that, you won't go to jail. Why is it that this, in this genocide alone, cannot be challenged? And that's something people have to think about. You know, Voltaire, who I'm not a fan of, Voltaire said that if you want to know who rules over you, find out who you're not allowed to criticize.
Right. And that criticism extends, not criticism, but incarceration, is in, what, 16 countries?
Right. Well, David Irving, the best of the World War II historians, you know, the only British author who'd been through every German archive, the only one who could speak perfect German, was put in prison for questioning the official version of the Holocaust. On the other hand, Walter Duranty of the New York Times was given a Pulitzer Prize for denying the Ukrainian genocide. I mean, what goes on here, you know?
He was something else, too.
Duranty?
Oh, gosh.
Well, you know, you get in good with the right people that you can get Pulitzer Prizes and, you know, mansions.
Sure. The Germans were accused of doing some massacres, too, the Katyn Forest episode.
Mm-hmm. Right, which they tried to expose.
Right.
In fact, I'm going to get to that one in a moment. But we should also remember that we've gotten into many of the wars through fake atrocity stories. For example, Spanish-American War, we were falsely told by the yellow press of William Randolph Hearst that the Spaniards were roasting Cuban priests and throwing the Cubans to sharks. It was all phony, all baloney.
Sure.
They were after the sugar in Cuba. And
sure.
World War One. We've already talked about the fact early in the broadcast that there were no Belgian children having their hands cut off by German bayonets. That was totally fabricated. And look at the modern times, the incubator baby story that got us into the Gulf War of 91. That turned out to be a total fake. So why should we not be allowed to question some of the atrocity stories associated with World War II? Okay, another point.
They tried to promote that Holocaust story in World War One, but nobody would believe it.
Right. Well, they used the 6 million figure.
Sure, the 6 million. Yeah.
you can easily find that on the web. Many news stories from the time of World War I saying that 6 million Jews had been were either endangered or had been killed.
Sure.
But, from a revisionist perspective, and I'm not an expert on this. I mean, you've had people like Guillermo or Rudolph on who really know this stuff. But nobody in the revisionist camp denies that there were concentration camps or that many people died or that there was intense suffering at the end of the war. The real debate is over why people died. I think that's probably an accurate way to put it. But I want to make this point that Germany was fighting a two-front war. They were vastly outnumbered. As the war was coming to a close, I think they were outnumbered something like 20-1 on the Eastern Front. They had the French, British and Americans and Aussies and whoever else coming in from the West. They didn't have the personnel to run an extermination program on the side. It was all hands on deck. And what they needed was laborers. And those camps were set up not for extermination. They were set up to make aircraft parts and uniforms and artificial rubber and other things that were needed. And the people they put in those camps were people who couldn't be entrusted to fight at the front. People like people who were Jews, right? But not all Jews were in the camps. I mean, there's a book called Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, as you know. There were Jews in the German army, even in World War II. Also, homegrown German communists. They emptied out the prisons and sent criminals into those camps. Also, foreign POWs worked in them. So it's a whole variety of prisoners in there, not just Jews. Sure. But also, why would they build barracks if they were intending only to exterminate people in them? There's another logical question. Now,
yeah, why would they give them clean clothing, tattoo them so that they would be in the record? Why would they give them clean clothing, help them if they were going to kill them? That just doesn't make any sense.
Right, and by the way, the Jews were allowed to celebrate Jewish holidays in those camps. They had Auschwitz had a soccer field, a movie theater for the prisoners, et cetera, right?
Okay, exactly.
Now, a lot of people have been swayed because I've seen those pictures of the walking skeletons, the horrible, some of the camps were just horrific conditions. But here's the thing. That was the result of starvation and disease. Just to take the Bergen-Belsen camp as an example, where people just looked horrible at the end of the war, you had a situation where they were moving prisoners from the east to the west, the workers from the east to the west, because everybody was afraid of the Russians. They were mostly afraid of the Russians. So Bergen-Belsen was overcrowded, that's number one. Secondly, the camp, as I understand it, was bombed by the Allies, and its water supply was contaminated. Furthermore, at the last year of the war, as you know, Deanna, the entire infrastructure of Germany was wiped out. You couldn't move food and medicine on trains to these camps because the trains were being strafed and bombed, and the Luftwaffe was history. There's no defense. I've read memoirs of people who lived in Germany. You're just driving a passenger car down the road. You'd be strafed. You had to run for your life. So no food could get to these camps, no medicine. The water was bad. You're overcrowded, and you're set up now for typhus and disease. And that's what the Allied soldiers who liberated some of these camps were seeing. If, in fact, Germany had been doing this all through the war, the Red Cross would have seen it because the Red Cross was visiting many of these camps, and they issued reports. They saw nothing like that. It was the destruction of Germany's infrastructure that resulted in this. And, of course, they couldn't release these typhus people into the general population because they were under quarantine. And, well, let me throw it back to you. You've heard so much on this subject.
Well, there were a lot of Jews that remained in their homes during the war. The Jewish hospital in Berlin was never bombed. People remained in that hospital. It was a very safe place to be. And as you say, they destroyed the infrastructure. And if you look at some of the other wars, including the so-called Civil War and the...
Andersonville.
Yes. You look at that camp. Oh, my gosh. And it was because people, they were not allowed to have food. And, the way that they dealt with the prisoners and the way that they dealt with the land, with destroying the infrastructure, destroying food production, and that's what they did in Germany, is they destroyed all of production. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
This is not legal advice. This is a public service announcement from TakeFromCaesar.us. Only one statute explains how to tax your paycheck, Tax Code Section 83. In decisions from 1979 to 2011, the courts say Section 83 governs the taxation of all compensation for personal services, but the IRS lies on the stand, claiming to be unfamiliar with Section 83. Only one person can explain what Section 83 means, David Merlin. Visit TakeFromCaesar.us for more information.
For the most amazing, calming, brain-stabilizing, blood sugar, and natural addiction-breaking formula, try CalMind. Anxiety melts, panic is gone, sleep is restful, and you'll stay calm during stress. Better than booze, mind-altering drugs, or anti-anxiety, antidepressant, toxic medications, CalMind lubricates your mind so you'll sail through the day effortlessly. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutridyne at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com and listen to the NutriMedical Report on GCN with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we do have some callers lining up that want to ask questions or make comments, but we're talking about the destruction, and you can see the same destruction in Iraq when the Allies, which would include Britain and the U.S. military, went in and bombed that country to smithereens to a point where only 4% of their electricity remained. And that was after sanctions where 500,000 children died. I mean, it's the same kinds of tactics from the beginning. From the beginning of the U.S. being engaged in warfare, and that they have been engaged in warfare in just about every decade, except for probably three. If you go back and look at all the wars that they've conducted, I mean,
we're really in a very much a continuum, and we're not just seeing events unfolding by chance. We're seeing events unfolding because the same powers that be are calling the shots. And we talked at the outset at the continuity of World War One, World War Two, and what a potential World War Three would be like. And we see that it's actually following pretty much a straight line. But we're talking about the Holocaust, and I guess another thing we should mention about that is that there has been exploitation of it. You know, Norman Finkelstein, who is Jewish, has written a book called The Holocaust Industry, which was another wake-up call for me. And just to give you an example from that book, there was a book came out called Fragments by Benjamin Wilkham Mirsky. And he described vividly his experiences in a horrible German concentration camp that won the National Jewish Book Award. Well, it turned out the guy had never been in a concentration camp, wasn't even in Germany at the time, and he wasn't even Jewish. I mean,
now, there's been a lot of stories like that.
Yeah,
And when they're exposed, they say, well, this one gentleman said, well, it happened in my mind, so it's real.
That's exactly right. And the other one we should probably just mention is the story of Anne Frank, and I do want to get to your callers, but as you know, Deanna, it turned out that much of the Anne Frank manuscript was written in ballpoint pen,
exactly,
which was not in use at the time, was not in use until after the war, so you know that that was not written, or at least most of it was not written by Anne Frank. And that was, of course, a very profitable venture because it was required reading in school. It was translated mm-hmm. into many languages. It became a Broadway play, mm-hmm. and it became an Oscar-winning movie. So it was quite a profitable venture for Anne Frank's father, but how much she had to do with writing it is certainly in question. And these are the kind of things that, you know, we're just looking at from a – not because we're anti-Semitic or something. Again, I'm half Jewish myself. We're just looking at this from a viewpoint of, you know, are these things – true, and we're not denying the camps or the deaths. We're just saying some of the facts regarding it appear not to be what we've been told.
Sure, and a lot of those bodies that we see in some of these documentaries were actually Germans who were moved.
Yes,
into a position where they could say, "Oh, look at all of these poor people. They died because of the Germans and their activities." Not so.
Well, there's been pictures of people in boxcars, and we've been told these are Jews headed to concentration camps, and actually there were post-war photos of the Germans who were displaced, you know?
Exactly.
This happened a lot. Another thing that's in question is that 6 million number, because if you add it up, if you took all the Jews that were in all the territories that Germany occupied at the height of the war for Germany, you still come with a figure less than 6 million, even if they killed every single Jewish
exactly.
man, woman, and child. So you know that the number has been twisted. And again, we're not denying that Jewish people died in these camps or endured enormous suffering. But just like science, history should be open to question and discussion.
Exactly. I think the number was 73,000 something, which is certainly not. In fact, at Auschwitz, they've changed the numbers there. It started at 4 million, and then it went down to some 1.5 million. So they're actually denying, you know, the 6 million number, too. But does anybody ever say, oh, yeah, those officials at Auschwitz, they need to be called to order because they're denying that 6 million died? But if you look at the Red Cross numbers, I mean, those are very accurate. And the Allies did not allow the Red Cross into their prisoner of war camps. Would not allow them in.
And speaking of numbers of bodies, you mentioned Catton Forest earlier. The Germans uncovered the bodies of 15,000 officers slaughtered, Polish officers slaughtered by Stalin's forces, and they mm-hmm. wanted the Red Cross to investigate. Those 15,000 bodies were there, but look, try and find 1.5 million bodies at Auschwitz. They're not there. So they try to say that all the bodies were cremated. Well, they only had a handful of cremation ovens at Auschwitz. It takes 24 hours to cremate a body. How could you
one
be
body.
Cremating
yes,
thousands
one.
Of people a day? It doesn't
withstand.
They would
still be doing it. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The 5 tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2000. 2001.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from TakeFromCaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at TakeFromCaesar.us.
Roberts & Roberts Brokerage believes that everyone should have some of their assets in investment-grade precious metals. Roberts & Roberts has been a trusted name in precious metals for nearly 40 years. Experienced investors will appreciate our personal service and low prices. If you're new to precious metals, we can help you find the products right for you. Give us a call today at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co. Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, when you're serious about precious metals.
This is Deanna. Our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of a wonderful book, Truth Is a Lonely Warrior. His website is jamesperloff.com. And just a quick note, that 98.8% survival rate for the American prisoners of war in German camps. Now, that's kind of incredible. And less than 40% of the Jews were in camps.
You know, that that figure is from the Red Cross, and it's been pointed out that if you want to see an accurate depiction of what German prisoner of war camps look like, just watch the movie Stalag 17 with William Holden. The guys who wrote the screenplay were in a German POW camp, and I've had known people who are in them. And if you watch that movie, every guy has a bunk of his own. Everybody's got a blanket. They've got a stove and they've got food. And that's the Geneva Convention, and the Germans observed it. And you have to ask, why is there such a sharp contrast between their POW camps and these concentration camps, right? But you contrast the 99% survival rate of American troops in German camps to the Rhineland Meadows camps, whereas, you know, in the French and American camps, they were not given shelter or food or latrines. They were simply forced to camp out in the open. About a million died in the French and American camps. They thought they were going to get good treatment if they were captured by the Americans instead of the Russians, and that did not turn out to be the case. In many of those American camps, they didn't even process the prisoners or take their names. Even the Russians at least did that in their POW camps. But that was also present. And the book that woke me up on that one, Deanna, was the book Other Losses by the Canadian author James Bach, and that was really turned around. And, of course, Eisenhower was the one who said these are not POWs. They're disarmed enemy forces. Therefore, they're not under the Geneva Convention. Right. And I'm sure that's one of the big reasons why Eisenhower's anointed career ended up with a presidency, is, you know, he played ball with the powers that be.
You have to also ask why the Allies would bomb the communication lines, the train lines, going to the labor camps, and somehow they didn't bomb the prisoner of war, the transportation going to the prisoner of war camps, because there is a big discrepancy in survival rate.
Right.
So who made that decision to bomb camps to set up the scenario that that is being forced upon us?
Well, that's just a great point, and we should also mention that concentration camps are nothing new. The United States used concentration camps in the Moro War in the Philippines. The British used them in the Boer War. And, of course, we put hundreds of thousands of Japanese in camps here. Now, people will
And Germans.
Yeah.
Germans that we brought up from South America.
In fact, I wasn't even familiar with that. People will say, well, the Japanese didn't look like those concentration camp victims. That's right, because if the train lines bringing supplies had been bombed and they were there long enough and disease set in, they would have looked like the
exactly.
German concentration camps. So what we've tried to do today, Deanna, is to try to cover what I want to do, and I think we've done, is to cover World War II pretty comprehensively by describing, number one, why it's called the Good War. And we talked about how it's been propagandized and what the actual motives were, and we tied that into World War I. And we talked about the Pearl Harbor and how that was arranged. And then we talked about the public pretext. Did Japan and Germany want to conquer the world? And finally, we talked about the Holocaust. And I think I'd like to, you know, keep this archive show as a reference point to give to people, at least what I know from my perspective in a concise manner about World War II, the most misrepresentative event of the 20th century, which is why it's called the Good War, and people won't doubt that other wars are bad, but they have their doubts about this one. I think maybe at this point we should go to your Skypers or callers.
Callers, right. Okay, let's take Susie in Arkansas. Susie, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
When I first decided to call in, I was curious about whether David Irving was still in prison. But then when you got into what went on at the end of the war, I can tell you about a man I knew who was stationed there during the very end of the war and during the occupation, and it would substantiate everything you were saying.
Sure.
But I was curious, do you know if David Irving is still in prison?
No, he's been out for quite some time.
Okay, I had met him one time at a home of some German friends of mine, and let me tell you, that man had some presence, and when he opened his mouth, you listen.
Sure.
And
he did recant on the Holocaust somewhat. I think that he was intimidated
severely. Sure.
Yeah, because they took his resources and put him in prison.
And then about Ernst Zundel as well.
Exactly.
But I knew a gentleman who's probably deceased at this point, but he was a colonel there during the occupation and at the very end of the war, and he said everything that moved on the highways was bombed.
Wow.
There basically was so little food.
Yes.
And he said he had hunting partners that were Jewish, and he knew about a Jewish fellow that owned a factory. The factory was utilized by the government during the war, and it was returned to him at the end of the war. I mean, there were a lot of people who had no problems.
Sure. You can't say the same thing about the property that was seized by the U.S. government from the Japanese. They didn't get their property back.
Right. Or even here now, look at the EPA.
Sure.
Anyway,
thank you. Susie, thank you for your call.
Thanks, Susie.
Okay, let's take Wes in Idaho. Wes? Wes, you there? Okay. Let's move on to Richard in Alabama.
Hello?
Oh, okay, Wes. Okay,
what
Wes.
What happened?
I don't know.
Start all over again. Thank you, Deanna, and thank you for having Mr. Perloff, a great guest.
Oh, he's a fabulous guest.
Truly. Two comments. One is that American prisoner of war in Japan, Korea, and Vietnam, not that we should have even been there, the survival rate there was very poor. What is my conclusion? The Japanese, the Koreans, the Vietnam, the Chinese, they don't observe the Geneva War rules. I called to point out Third Reich books. .com. They have reprinted 100 books from Germany in 1940 and translated them into English, and it is a very good source for what the National Socialists were trying to tell their people. It had to do with race and culture and religion. They also sell flags and films and music of that time. I might. Does Mr. Perloff have any comment on that? Does he know of this ThirdRightBooks.com?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad that I could get it across.
Yes.
That, like
Thank
I said,
so
they've got 100 books from that time, printed by the SS, and it's about National Socialism. It's got to be a really good source of the truth of what the National Socialists were trying to purvey
at
that time.
And, of course, when the Allies went in, they burned all those books during the denazification process. Anyway, well, thank you.
Still around $10 a copy for many of the books.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
Thank you.
All righty, let's take Richard in Alabama. Richard?
Mr. Perloff, have you heard any news about French airplanes or pilots? In Poland prior to the war?
No, doing what?
Helping the Poles.
I had not specifically heard that. Had you heard that, Deanna?
No.
I just know that they were... entertainment movie on Belarus TV, and it was about Russian pilots and French pilots sharing the same airfield in the Russian-occupied zone of Poland.
Huh.
Well, it was an entertainment motion picture, so that's not authority.
Sure. Yeah. Did you have a question?
Well, I just wondered if he could confirm that.
Mm. Oh, I can't. I think there was a time, and I'm not sure if this might be a reference to the same thing, during the interval of... non-hostility between Germany and Russia that preceded the war, I believe that the Germans were allowed by the Russians to use some territory for aircraft training. I seem to recall reading that somewhere, but whether or not that territory, I don't think it would have been in Poland, because Poland at that time was still sovereign. But that's I haven't heard anything specific about French pilots in Poland.
Well, okay.
Okay, thanks so much, Richard. Okay, let's take Frank in North Carolina. Frank?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. With regards to the Germans going into, attack the Soviet Union, I've always heard my entire life, since back when I was a boy in the 70s, that, that was like Hitler's big mistake, that he was crazy, he was mad. Now, weren't they going to attack him anyway? So, I mean, he was attacking them before they attacked the Germans, right?
Yeah, it's that old principle of kill him before he kills you. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier in the show, that it was a preemptive strike and that Stalin actually had 170 divisions bunched on his western border preparing to attack Europe, which he thought had been sufficiently weakened by the war between England, France, and Germany. So, yeah, but it was definitely preemptive from the German point of view. But they were joined, as we said, by their allies, the Croats, the Finns, the Italians, the Spaniards, the Romanians, the Hungarians, and the Belgians.
That's just, it's such a prevalent theme, though, in the criticism of Hitler and his madness and how, you know, that it was sick in his mind. I mean, I've heard that my entire life, and nobody ever calls him out on that. I remember, it's funny, I remember I had forgotten that, it was required reading to read The Diary of Anne Frank. I can't remember what grade it was, but we're all American children are indoctrinated that, the Jewish people are this special persecuted people, and that we can never criticize. We can never even open our ears to any criticism. We must attack anyone who criticizes anything that Jewish organized Jewry does, anything Israel does, anything like that. It's just it's really, really amazing, and I'm really skeptical of any criticism that I hear of Adolf Hitler and the Germans during that time frame, and it's just a real shame what's happened to them and how they have just allowed themselves to be abused, and basically they have Stockholm syndrome now, basically. And
I don't know that we can say that all of them are, that they allowed themselves to be abused any more than we can in this country say that, oh, we've allowed ourselves to be propagandized. I mean, things happen, and they were certainly propagandized into the situation that they're in now just as much as we are. And there are lots and lots of Germans that are very aware of what is going on and what has gone on, but they have a law there that you keep your mouth shut or you end up in prison. So right. if you make an example of one or two people, then the rest of them are going to, they might not speak out publicly, but they know.
Well,
they know.
They need a leader. Dr. David Duke is now running for the U.S. Senate, and I think he's going to be a good leader in getting a lot of truth out. Maybe some of this stuff will come out as well. Have either one of you seen the, supposed to be a historical documentary. I've watched about 10 or 15 minutes of it recently, and it was on, I think, American Heroes channel or something like that. I've never heard of the channel before. I was totally unfamiliar with it. And I was at someone else's house, and it was about the Jews, the heroic Jews back in the 30s, and I guess possibly it was even during World War II, in America, working in America, and how Jewish organized crime was working with the U.S. government, with the FBI, against the Nazis in America, the Nazi spies and whatnot back in the 30s and whatnot. And I just thought, I don't necessarily believe what I see on the History Channel or this new channel that I've just become aware of. But the thing is, it does, though, show to me the infrastructure, that the infrastructure has been around for a long time with organized Jewry working with, the U.S. government and law enforcement, federal law enforcement.
Yeah, which is still going on with policemen being sent to Israel to learn police tactics. But back in the 30s, I wouldn't doubt that there were Jewish mobs. You grew up watching The Untouchables, you think they're all Italians, right? But actually, there was the Purple Gang and Meyer Lansky and quite a few Jewish mobsters. And I do believe they worked with the Allies during the Second World War. But I don't think they would have been helping ferret out any German spies in the 30s. Because, Dan, I think you'd agree in the 30s, Germany was just skating onto her feet, and
exactly.
They would not have had the ability or the desire to try and spy in America at that point. They were not at war, and they weren't contemplating it. But to be sure, there have been connections between organized Jewry, very deep connections, as we know, between Zionism and the American government.
Well, there were pro-German groups, and when they had meetings, The mafia, you know, would go in there. They'd break some legs, throw people out of some, out of a second-story window.
One last thing, and then I'll hang up. They also spoke specifically about Meyer Lansky and some of these other Jewish gangsters, but they also mentioned Jacob Rubenstein or Jack Ruby, and they said that he was one of the most brutal, and his favorite thing to do was go around breaking the arms and legs of these Germans in America.
Wow. You're correct. I've read that about Jack Ruby, that he would try to break up meetings of the German-American Bund. No question about that. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Frank. All righty. Oh, we have a break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
One last caller. Did you want to say anything before we take our last caller?
No, let's go ahead.
Okay, let's take Kent in West Virginia. Kent?
Yeah, hi, Deanna. Yeah, I'm going to send you something through your contact page about MH370 because if anybody I read on the net, your theory is closest to mine. So, but now, as far as the French being French fighters being in Poland. Now, there was a large contingent of Polish fighters, pilots, who made up the Battle of Britain. There was, I think, it was one or two squadrons of Polish fighters.
Right.
I mean, the majority of those pilots were not English pilots, from what I believe. And now, my theory is that, of course, we had the situation where Japan was a closed society, and you sent Admiral Dewey in there and opened them up, and of course, then they became an capitalist engine, you know, economic engineer, and they had to get resources, and then the United States, well, they had to choke them off, and then we had the war. And the same thing is going to happen with China. Now, China was closed, and then they went in there and opened them up, and now they've turned them into a capitalist engine, and they need resources, and now the United States is in the process of choking them off again. And so I think it's a repeat of the same thing, and there'll be war here pretty soon.
Sure.
And as far as earlier you were talking about the you know, small country like Japan conquering the world, well, yeah, I mean, considering that the United States was a, they couldn't conquer the United States, I mean, they could conquer some of the poor parts. But we have a situation where Britain was a comparably sized country, but conquered, but, you know, that was a lesser developed world, you know. Britain was on the forefront of the technology, which allowed them to do that. And
with their naval power, they had the biggest naval power in the world, and could go into India and take over all these countries. Sure.
Yeah. And now we have a situation where an even smaller, teeny tiny little country is, and I won't say conquer the world, but I'm going to say subvert the world, and we know who that is.
Yes, we do.
A little place over there in the Middle East, and they're not going to conquer it so much as subvert it. So it's possible.
Sure.
If we don't stop it, which I hope somebody will, but I'm not really hopeful about that.
No, I don't see it in the future. Thank you, Kent.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much. Okay, we missed Buthena's call. I know that Buthena from Pennsylvania, she called in. She's the first caller and apparently couldn't hang on, but she was born in Iraq, and there are so many comparisons between what the Allies did in Germany and what they did in Iraq years later. Same technique, same set of, you know, warmongering tactics. So anyway, James Perloff, you're just a fabulous, fabulous educator. And I hope that people will re-listen to this program, because there's a lot of things that you brought to the forefront, and just the way that you presented it. You're a linear thinker, which I really appreciate. We've been well fed today.
Well, thank you. There's something I wanted to do. Like I say, the first show we did on this recording didn't really work, and there's so many other things that need to be addressed, but I feel that World War II is important for people to know the truth about, because, it's, as I say, it's the most lied about event of the 20th century. But it takes a long time to peel off all those lies, and that's why I was delighted that you had a three-hour slot open today, because I knew it was going to take more than 1 or even 2 hours to investigate this war thoroughly from an alternative media critical thinking perspective.
Sure. And you've just touched on the high points. We could have gone on for, well, several days, right?
We've been kind of hoarse at the end of that, but there's enough material there. But yeah, if we stick to the high points, we'll hopefully hold people's attention.
Exactly. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Deanna. It's a delight. You are so well informed, and just great being on with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you next week.
Poor water quality is a major health issue, and it's only getting worse. Municipalities can't keep up, standards have dropped, and pollutants are increasing. Where does it all end? It ends by keeping the pollutants outside of your home with HydroCare's advanced systems available at Wave Home Solutions. No less than the best purification materials and processes have been developed by HydroCare to provide you with healthy, clean water for drinking, cooking, and showering. HydroCare far surpasses the competition in removing chlorine, odors, iron, lead, chemicals, limescale, and much more. Don't settle for less when it comes to your water. We'll take care of the toughest water problems for you, whether it's from a city or well source. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, call 888-997-WAVE. That's 888-997-WAVE. Or go to bestwater123.com. That's bestwater123.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Well, good evening. This is Gordon Martinez.